Hi, welcome back to The Monologue, a Mike Flanagan podcast where we take a thematic deep dive into the works of the filmmaker Mike Flanagan, featuring roundtable discussions, guest appearances, and an exploration of Mike Flanagan's signature tool, The Monologue. My name is Cecilia. I'm joined by my co-hosts Kelsey and Riley, and a very, very special guest, actress and Flaniverse favorite, Katie Parker. You know her from The Haunting of Hill House, Fall of the House of Usher, Next Exit, just to name a few. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Hi, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Here. We've been so excited to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm glad it aligned finally and we were able
It's been a bit of planning, but it's so nice to see you again. If anyone is a longtime listener, you'll remember we had Katie and Jamie Flanagan were talking about Absentia a couple years ago on Horror Struck on our other show. So yeah. It's nice to have a little reunion.
Yeah, it's sweet. Oh, Absentia.
Absentia is so good.
It is good.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. I was going to say, so a lot of the work that you do, Katie, is very like drama focused, mm-hmm. but you're so funny. Your promo video for the Kickstarter for Absentia.
Thanks.
If I'm ever feeling down, I just think about that. It's so funny.
Yeah, that's funny you said that. I went on a walk with my mom and her friend Lisa, and Lisa said, "Hooray for heroin!" or "Hooray for the heroin!" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, what a throwback!"
Honestly, yeah. Without the context of that, maybe don't shout it on the street. But I would highly recommend. I showed my girlfriend that video earlier because she's also a huge fan of Absentia. Yeah. I told her, hey, stop by, say hi to Katie, and she took a nap instead, so.
That's fine.
She
made the right choice. And for everybody who's listening, the way we funded Absentia was like Kickstarter and crowdfunding, and Mike came up with this brilliant idea to make YouTube videos to promote, because it sucks asking people for money. So we were like, let's be hilarious and charming, and everybody had a little video that you can watch on YouTube.
There's a good handful of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing other actors, but yeah, if you ever want a nice little throwback to early Mike Flanagan filmmaking days, that seems like a pretty good example.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, our theme of the podcast is talking about The Monologue, and that would not be possible without wonderful actors like you, Katie. I think one thing I don't know is how did you get started in acting? How did you find your love for the craft?
Well, I had a really hard time in school. Really hard time. Like, was not the kid that could, you know, get good grades. And I wasn't like hyperactive, but I was very like dreamy and had a hard time paying attention and just found, I think a lot of it's neurodivergence that's kind of going around in that world. Hey.
the ADHD does me in a lot. So
just having a different type of brain. So I found like the theater kids, the drama kids, and just resonated with them. And acting felt like it just made sense. And it just gave me some confidence of like, oh, this, like, you know, when something aligns with you or resonates with you and you're like, oh, this like just feels right. That's sort of how I fell into it. I grew up dancing, so I was used to being on stage, but didn't feel like wasn't a particularly great dancer. And I didn't do my first play until like real play. I did like, you know, school plays in elementary school and that kind of thing until I was about like 18, and then went to college and studied theater. So I fell into it that way, and it just felt like, oh God, I'm never going to survive in the world unless I can like just be an actor. And it's just been like a slog ever since trying to get work, and it's challenging, but that's how I felt.
Well, and you're still around and you're still thriving, it seems like. I was looking at your IMDb page earlier, and you have got a slew of projects coming out. I think one with Patricia Heaton you starred alongside with?
Yeah, my very dear friend Angela Gullner wrote and directed a movie called The Beldam. Patricia Heaton and I star in it, and we made that, in 2023. So it should be coming out soon. We were in Oklahoma, and it's really good. Yeah, I did like 6 indie films or something in 2023, which was fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
The indie world is like trying to thrive right now, which is good.
I think has been in the horror space for quite a few years, especially post-pandemic, I think was such a perfect time, because when real world horrors start, that's when we start kind of projecting it onto our art. So it'll keep you busy.
Totally.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, trying to fight the big Marvels, DCs, the big blockbuster films, because all these mid-level films are just kind of disappearing. So it's nice that at least in the horror world, still trying to make it work.
Yeah. And I think there's, you know, well, this is, I guess, my own personal opinion, but I haven't seen a ton of big budgeted films that have like really moved me. There's like a lot of money thrown at them, but I feel like even the acting's kind of lazy, and the, you know, it's like, it's not good. It's not good. And,
no. And it's hard, because especially when you speak of like the superhero films, like something James Gunn has said, who is now ahead of like the DC universe, was just that, you know, I don't want to make a movie unless the script is complete. So it's how, as an actor, could you possibly make choices when you don't know where your character is going?
Totally.
I think that was my first thought, was like, well, James Gunn has made those two superhero movies that made me sob recently, so at least we have him on our side.
He's a goodie.
The new Superman movie, definitely. Oh, it was much better than I was expecting.
Was it good? I haven't seen it yet. I need
to. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Go see it.
It's nice to have a movie full of hope in a world that is can be so hopeless.
Totally. Totally.
Speaking of hopelessness and horror, should we talk about some of the monologues that Miss Katie Parker has performed? Because
let's dive in.
It's just so interesting to see the like range of characters that you have played, and then you as a person, and just wow, Poppy Hill is a really, really scary character. How do you like get into that headspace? Because she just seems very different from you as a person, but also in looking at characters, like the most recent one, I think of yours in the Flannaverse was in The Fall of the House of Usher. And that character is so, so drastically different.
Yeah. How do I get into the headspace of it?
Yeah. How do you kind of balance playing such different characters?
Well, each project is really different. And then me, the person, is different each project. You know, we did The Haunting of Hill House, I think started filming that in like 2017. And then Fall of the House of Usher was like 2022. So like, I'm a different person as well. With Poppy, I hadn't been on television in a long time. I think I guess it was like a few years. So I was like really, really nervous. And it was like Mike's, like a huge thing for Mike. So I kept wanting to do well, not just for myself, but for this person who gave me this opportunity. I remember before I went to go shoot the monologue in the Red Room, I called my dad and I was really nervous about it, and he was so great. And he just was like, but you know how to do this. You've done it a million times. And the thing about life is like, it's going to happen and it's going to be over. So just try to be present, which is great advice. With Poppy, I just tried to play her as someone who is is genuine and trying to relieve someone of their torment and pain. And I kept thinking of her almost like a child. Like, she kind of has this like childlike wonder to her and a real musicality to the way she speaks. And once I found that, it felt so different from the way I am that it makes me braver when something is, as an actor, it makes me a lot braver if I can like latch on to something that's so different, so I can just make different choices. It helps me to not feel self-conscious. And then for Annabelle Lee, I like wasn't sure that I was, I'm never sure, actually. I was about to say, I wasn't sure if I was doing a good job on set with that, but I'm always insecure with characters and being on set. I never really feel like I have it. I have some moments where I'm like, okay, I liked that choice that I made. That was cool. But I'm trying to get better at this, but I'm like always looking to please the director or the producer or my scene partner. So I want to be a good coworker, but you get hired for your point of view, you know? So I'm trying to get better at being like, all right, I know what I'm doing. These are the choices I'm going to make, and then be malleable, right? If it's like not going in the right direction. But for Annabelle Lee, I felt like I wasn't really nailing it because I think I was trying to do so much, and she's such an observer. In the show, she's just sort of watching madness happen all the time. And you want her to be like the decent heartbeat of integrity throughout the show. And then when I originally, that monologue I did in The Fall of the House of Usher, another actress played an older version of Annabelle Lee, and there was some recasting that happened. And when I got that role, that monologue, another actress, they shot it. They shot it, I think, very early into filming the show. So it wasn't mine, but when it became mine, it felt really satisfying because I kind of got to complete her. And it's such like beautiful language. We shot that all through the night. I think my call time was like 8 p.m. So we wrapped at like 8, 9 a.m. the next day, and we shot in this really beautiful cathedral in Vancouver, Canada. And Bruce, who I got to play opposite of, he's so generous. And it felt that one felt really magical. I really liked doing it.
Yeah, it's really powerful when you watch it.
Thanks.
Because I feel like your character in that, she speaks up a lot, but there's something about that monologue in particular where she talks about the poverty of him that is just, it's just really beautiful. And like you said, you play it so, I don't know if subtle is the right word for it.
Yeah, I think
so. But I feel like, like a lot of actors would be tempted to kind of like really like do the drama of it. But you almost approach it with almost like an exhaustion that just, it's so like heartbreaking.
Yeah. At the end of her tether, and, you know, spoiler alert, she's already dead. So it's like, he's already killed her. You know, she's not there. Gosh. You know,
when your character turns around, like, it's already heartbreaking. And then your character turns around at the end of that scene, and it's just like a stab to the heart. And I think it works too, because your character is how the audience last saw your character. So it is, your character is still pretty young.
Yeah. I know a lot of people were confused about, they're like, what's the stuff in the back of your head? And I was like, that's my brain.
I don't think it was confusing at all.
Okay, good.
No, it's pretty understated for something so graphic. So I'm surprised that people, not sure what they could have thought it was.
Yeah. It was raspberry jam.
Well, you know, yummy. She's got all those kids. It probably happened more than
it's
once.
It's sticky. Kids are sticky.
They got jam hands.
So you've known Mike Flanagan for a really long time. You guys kind of started in LA around the same time. comparing, like, let's say Absentia to, like, even his later works, how have you seen him evolve? Because I can't imagine what it'd be like looking at the script for Absentia and then looking at the script and seeing your monologue in Haunting of Hill House. You're like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. Well, with that, you know, there was the Haunting of Hill House, there was a writer's room with a lot of different writers in there. So that it was, you know, there were more people's imaginations going into the scripts. With Mike, like, to me, he's very much the same, you know, like I didn't meet him as like a filmmaker. I met him as a person in LA. I moved to LA October 2008, and I met him either that December or January. So I met him very shortly into moving to LA, and he just became, he was dating a new friend of mine who I had understudied for at a theater company in Virginia. So it was like three is company. Like, they were my new friends in LA, and he wanted to be directing, I wanted to be acting. And so we started to collaborate that way. So in some ways, like, this sounds nuts, but like, I don't always think of Mike as like a filmmaker. That of course is like what he does as like a profession. But like, I think of him, I don't know, the way I think of my friends from like high school or college, where you meet the person and then they do this thing, you know?
That's very wholesome for LA to not just view your friends as like a job. So that's great.
Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, I'm close with Karen Gillan and Rose McIver and these, you know, like great actors, but like I meet them as people, like, you know, cause I've never really worked with either of them. I met Karen on set, but we weren't working together, and like just develop a relationship over time, you know?
There's some deleted scene of you in Oculus floating around, isn't there? Would that would have been that set. Wow.
Yes.
That was, God. Yeah. It's you guys have had this little group for quite some time. Cause that was 2013 that came out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it's so nice because, now you guys have worked together on Next Exit, which I am making my girlfriend watch tonight.
Oh, sweet.
Aww. I love that movie. It's such a deep philosophical kind of thinker. I like it a lot.
I like it too. Molly Elfman wrote and directed that, and I think it's a really, it's a beautiful film. But I will say, like, with Mike, the thing that I guess always stuck out about him is that he's very special, like a very warm, very smart storyteller. Whether he's just like describing how he went to the grocery store, or describing like his next movie, he's just great at describing life, you know? And that's always maintained throughout the years. That's always been, Yeah, something about him throughout the years that I've like noticed that is particularly special. But the difference from Absentia to Hill House is sort of like the superficial stuff of just like money and, you know, bigger budgets and like getting paid and like, you know, that kind of stuff. But I honestly, the way he like runs a set is all kind of the same. He's a tremendous leader. He is someone who I think demonstrates good character through leadership, and that doesn't always happen on sets. So, and he's
we
been
need
that
more of that.
We need some good leadership.
Absolutely.
Especially from men. They've really shit the bed.
Really dropped the ball.
Yeah.
They really.
He's a great example, which I'm glad that this is the kind of little horror community that I fell into, because it's been so friendly, so welcoming, so warm, kind, all of the good stuff that you hear.
Yeah.
It's all true.
It's all true.
Yeah.
So when you get a script, let's say like Haunting of Hill House, how much of the character does Mike go through with you besides what's obviously written down? Do you kind of have a full like grasp like what the character's been through? Do you get to play a little bit internally?
Yeah. I mean, he's really trusting and collaborative. In fact, like, I don't always feel like directed by him, more so guided, you know?
And
the word trust keeps coming up, where I think every time I've started a scene or a monologue, he's kind of like, well, why don't we just start with like what you have, you know? And if it's like way off, you know, he'll guide it back. But he's not one of those directors that's like, you're going to do it here, here, and here. Sometimes if they're getting a really ambitious shot, you sort of block for the camera, so the shot is really cool. So I guess in terms of direction, I've seen him directed more there, but he really writes for actors. So maybe that's his trick, actually, of like, I'm not going to have to direct it so much because I know I know her and I know what she might do. But I say that, and I don't know if he anticipated what I did with Poppy in his imagination.
Was it that character specifically, since that one seems so far out there? Were there any like bumps or any big significant like any memory that you can have of like, hey, that was way off, let's kind of rework and reel it back in?
No. I remember I did like a take, and he was at Video Village, where the director and the producers and all the different creative teams are looking at a monitor. And then Carla Gugino and I were on set, and I remember he ran back to set after I did a take, and his eyes were big, and he was like, yeah, let's just do it again. So he like liked it, and
that's great.
Yeah. So yeah, that was lucky. I mean, yeah, it could have been a nightmare. So yeah. I got lucky.
You're also talented, so
thank you very much.
I know as a talented person, it's hard to say like I have talent, but you do.
Thank it's you. True. I appreciate it. I mean, I think we all have
people back. Talent, but, huh? We wouldn't keep inviting you back.
Oh yeah. Thanks. It doesn't always feel that way though, you know, because like I auditioned to play Nell and I didn't get it. And Victoria Pedretti got it, who's also extraordinarily talented. And then I auditioned to play Joey, who's like drug addict Joey. Mm-hmm. And that didn't go my way. So sometimes as an actor, you're like, oh, I'm not good. And I got so lucky, and they just gave me Poppy. And when I was like reading her, I was like, this is the coolest part. Like, that's so wild. Like, I didn't have to audition for it. And some actors really love auditioning. They feel like they've earned the part. I'm not as good at auditioning as I am when I just kind of, I'm someone who needs time. I can be good at an audition when I have time, but it's such a fast turnover. Usually it's, again, back to that like neurodivergence, you know, I am who I am and can rock it if I've got time.
I wonder if it's like a hyper fixation kind of thing where you're like, I am this character now. Not to be confused with like a method acting, because hopefully you're not, you know, convincing women to hang themselves or anything.
Yeah.
How do you prepare like such a deep monologue or like a character like that? Like, what's your process?
I carry my script with me everywhere, and especially parts that I don't understand or like aren't feeling like they don't resonate, or like I haven't experienced something in life that I can draw from. Or if I'm like confused by a character's motivation, it like weirdly helps me to bring the script everywhere I go. And like, if I take my dog to the park, I'll open the script and see if like the environment there kind of informs a channel of like understanding and creativity. Reading it over and over and over again. I am not precious. I ask for line readings all the time. I ask people, what do you think this means? I'm really visual, and I see a lot of like color. So sometimes just coloring in my script, it like stirs up different kinds of like creativity, or making like a Pinterest page, or listening to a Spotify playlist, like helps me be freer as an actor. I used to kind of go back to like what I learned in college and like breaking down the motivation of the character and getting like really intellectually like analytical. And it gets me in the way of myself, I've found. So I kind of go back to who I was before school got me, and go from that like just natural creative place that all children have, and try to go from that impulse. Did I answer the question? I was like, Okay, cool.
Yeah, I went to school for theater because I thought maybe I'll do something in theater, and then discovered I didn't love it as much as everyone else. But I do remember taking classes where they're like, okay, let's break this monologue down as if you were going to perform. And I was like, this is so much work. Like,
it's so much work. And there's something about monologues that they feel like a wave. It's sort of like the ocean, kind of, where it's like moving and you get like momentum, and then there's this big like arc thing that happens, and then like a kind of a crash, and then it like settles. And
oh, yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah, I feel like that. Thank you. Not yeah. Thank you. I don't know. Like I think if I coach actors and I like try to get them out of their heads and more into, I don't know, like nature and real life and colors and music, yeah, and see if that sort of inspires it.
Talking about the monologue, especially from Hill House, this is something that Kelsey can speak to, who is a huge Universal Halloween Horror Nights fan. We were recently talking about the Hill House, and that Poppy was in it.
Yes, she was. And
I know that the Hollywood one was different from the Orlando one. The Orlando one, she was in it quite a lot.
She was.
But cool. Yeah, she was. Well, I know in the Orlando one, they kind of rearranged the house as the season goes on. So I went opening weekend, and there was like a hallway with all these like doorknobs that Netflix was like very particular about. And then one of the doors was like a scrim. And so you'd be like looking at like the doorknobs and the detail. And then like Poppy was right there.
Amazing.
And then they had a scene where like, she was like, the scare actor was like walking behind a scrim down the hall with you. So it was kind of like, she was like in your ear.
Oh my God. That's so cool.
And I remember like when that house was there, I remember seeing on all the Flaniverse Instagrams that you guys went and you got to go through the house. Was that weird seeing like a scare actor, like, did you try to do your performance?
Yeah, it was amazing, actually. Like, I could cry thinking about it. I was at dinner actually with Karen Gillan and Molly Elfman, and Molly wrote and directed Next Exit. And Mike was like, do you want to come to Halloween Horror Nights? There's going to be like, Poppy's going to like be in the house. I was like, yes. So we all like met up. And I mean, it's like surreal. And I felt really proud of myself as a artist of like, oh, I like originated a character. I didn't ever think of that until I saw other actresses sort of embodying the movement and the way of speaking and the physicality. It was totally surreal. I wish like I had brought my family and stuff to see it. I didn't know there was one in Orlando until I went to CreepyCon in Knoxville and people were talking about it in Orlando. I was like, oh, I should have gone there.
The one in Orlando is huge. Like, I've never been to the one in Hollywood. We're going for my bachelorette night. We're going to the Hollywood one this year.
Yay!
But my fiance and I go to the one in Orlando every year, and he proposed at the Orlando event last year. So I know that the houses are different, but I've never experienced like both versions in the same year. So
yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm so excited you're getting married. Marriage. So cute.
I just made my grandma watch that movie.
Has she ever seen it?
She'd Wait. Never seen The Princess Bride. My grandma's not really? A big movie watcher, but we're, How? You know, okay. at her 89 years, we're finally catching her up. But that's so cool and so impressive to, like, just have that as you are the gold standard for that character. When I was watching YouTube videos earlier of just, like, clips of you in these shows, I fell down this, like, worm rabbit hole of, other actors doing like this monologue and doing scenes as Poppy, and they were all doing great, but I was like, oh, I can't unsee Katie. Like, this just doesn't feel right.
So
you're gonna be the like person everyone thinks of when they're remembering that the show years and years from now when it's a classic.
It's special. It's so weird because like you don't know it's happening, you know, like I'm a very insecure, like curious person, creative person, but like not, you know, I think like what you would think of a typical actor. I'm more introverted and need a lot of quiet time, and I'm always kind of second guessing myself, and I'm trying to like trust more now, the impulses I have. Cause like during that time, I just would never have imagined it would have turned into like what it's turned into that character. And even like when Mike showed me, that episode, I think it's episode 8, the Screaming Mimi's episode. I was like, I don't know. And he was like, Katie, you're crazy. It's great. But then I watched an interview with, Adam Driver, who was like, all I can see are the mistakes, when, you know, that's the, like, the thing about film is it lives forever. And if you're like a perfectionist or you understand something years later and you're like, oh, I wish I could have infused that line with what I know now, it's like, you have to like, let it go. But it made me feel better that he experiences the same kind of like, inner critic or inner perfectionism of, you know, wanting to get something perfect, but it wouldn't be what it is if it was like perfect, and perfect's not interesting.
No, so, it is. It's so hard to like let something go into the world and just have to let it exist as is. It's as I write occasionally, and it is. It's like at some point you have to just stop editing and like put it out into the world, and then it's everyone else's problem.
And then it's everybody else's.
And I feel like, if you're questioning it, that means that you're doing something right. Like, I'm not in entertainment like they are. I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. But I'll have these times where I'm like, I feel like a terrible teacher. I feel like this lesson didn't work. And, like, everyone always says, like, if you are questioning whether or not you're a good teacher, it means that you are because you care. So I feel like the same thing can apply to actors.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. That's amazing you're a teacher, by the way. What grade do you teach?
So I used to teach 7th grade for 4 years, and then I needed a break from middle school. So right now, this upcoming school year, I am a full-time sub, so that like for the honeymoon and the wedding and stuff like that.
Perfect.
So I sub from pre-K to 12th grade. But my favorite, like the sweet spot is like 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. So when I go back to teaching, I want to do like upper elementary.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Yeah, 7th grade, I'm sure, is it's like a wild,
it's
wild
a
time.
Lot. Yeah, although
I can't imagine how it smells.
We use a lot of Bath and Body Works wallflowers, but the theater kids are the ones that made it worth it, though. Like the when we were talking earlier about like the theater kids, like my first year of teaching, like I felt like I was like the least favorite teacher, but I had a group of theater kids that just kind of claimed me, and like they would like come hang out at my room like during lunch and stuff like that, and that like got me through that year. So it's like the theater kids don't just help other students; they help new teachers.
The theater kids are the best. They're like the sensitive, weird, hilarious, queer, awesome, amazing kids. They just like always made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And they're always kind of the, because that's where I was too, was like gravitating towards the like English teacher, theater director, band director. It's like we know where it's safe to be. So it's also nice just like being the safe person for those people too, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I was an English teacher, so that made sense.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes total sense. And that's why we're all so into horror movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's how we ended up here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow horror is one of the safer communities to be in.
Yeah, you wouldn't guess that. But it's like, I guess it's like the opposite of like the, like people are like, how can you watch that? Like it's so intense or gory or whatever. And it's like, but the community is like the opposite. It's all like warm and fuzzy. And
100%. 100%.
And we need that it's catharsis like acting, from right? the horror. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're being vulnerable when you do art. And I think there's something vulnerable about being scared. And there's something really communal about going to a movie where like the whole theater is packed and you're all screaming at the screen together. It's such a lovely experience. I saw Sinners. Mm-hmm. I saw it. Good. Because I live in LA, I saw it at the Grove, and it was one of the best experiences I had because one of the actors was just randomly there and had brought like his whole family and all of his friends.
That's so
and
cool.
So it was one of the funnest shows I'd ever been to. Everyone was screaming and hollering. It was such a good time.
Cute. I love that. Only in LA is there to be like the actor there with like their parents and
their friends. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
They try to do that in Austin sometimes. There's like a PR firm here that like will arrange like press screenings and stuff, which since my fiance is a journalist, we get to go. But those are always my favorite screenings because those are people usually that actually want to be there. There's always some exceptions, but it's like a more engaged audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. My barometer now for if I know a crowd is going to be good is because I mostly go to AMC showings is if everyone claps when Nicole Kidman comes out, I know I have a cool crowd.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's going to be
a fun group. So funny. Kelsey Riley and I have each talked about kind of like our favorite like monologue. Do you have a favorite monologue, Katie, that Mike Flanagan has written or that you've performed? Like, if there was one monologue you wish that you could perform, which one would you want?
I really love the Poppy Hill stuff.
It's really good.
I wanted there to be, like, a spinoff with her and the ghosts of Hill House. Like, when I saw the Queen's Gambit, I was like, I want Poppy to have that kind of formula that they used where it goes back in time to her childhood and her life with her mom. And I wanted to know so much about Poppy. And there were scripts that had more information about the ghosts, and we shot some stuff that ended up not making it into the show. But I loved saying that monologue, and I like go back and read it sometimes. And I'm like, damn, this was good and just fun. Just fun. The way of speaking, that sort of like 1920s like flair and the different language, like quiet kitten, he's Joed. And I don't know. It just like transported me into another world. Yeah. And I don't know. Let's see what else. I liked a lot of the monologues in Midnight Mass. I know he got like some crap for that, but I thought they were
a bit of a TikTok trend of like, and here's the monologue I've delivered to my waiter after watching Midnight Mass.
Yeah,
I think it was all in fun. It was nice.
It was all fun. Yeah.
Although Mike kind of played into that a little bit on his TikTok account because like he would make these videos and then it like Kate would be in the background like, are you going to monologue again? And then he would like go into some like random monologue. About something.
Yeah.
You have to be in on the joke.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Speaking of the Poppy Hill backstory, did you... Because there is so much, like, just from context in the show of, like, Hazel and William and that whole kind of family. Yeah. Did you give Poppy any kind of backstory yourself or, like, think into what she was like when she was younger? Or was that something you and Mike had talked about at all?
That was some work I did just on my own privately, that I don't share typically. I think Meryl Streep actually said this, of like sharing your process, like as an actor with people, is like showing the plumbing while you're building a new house. You know, like you just want to show the house and be like, this is the house I made, not like this is the plumbing and the fixings and stuff. But backstory, sometimes it's useful, sometimes it's not. But I think because I hadn't acted in a while, I was doing a lot of that work just for myself, whether it like fueled the performance, great. But it was fun to sort of map out who this person was and what it all meant, because so much of her dialogue was like, wait, what? Like going back and reading it, it's like, where is this coming from in her mind? It had to come from somewhere.
Yeah, she's very interesting, and half of it is riddles and nursery rhymes, and you're like, I don't know how to decipher this, but I know you want to kill me.
yeah. She's a very traumatized person.
Well, I mean, I don't think she would not see herself as a villain. She's just like, this makes sense to me, so I'm going to give you this advice. Like, I think she's like actually trying to help Olivia. It's only from like our perspective that it's like, oh, this is not good advice. Like, no, don't do this.
Yeah.
But I think she sees herself as like a helpful character, so that's like a different dynamic too.
Totally.
Yeah, she's a mother speaking to another mother.
Yes, exactly.
Who just happens to be a bit mentally ill and vulnerable, which, you know,
I mean, if your kids are having a nightmare, you should wake them up.
100%
sound.
Yeah.
Wake them up. Put them out of their misery.
It is. It's almost like a savior complex kind of issue that she's projected onto Olivia in that show. It's very, very interesting, and I really, it's just making me want to rewatch the show. So, kudos to you guys and everyone involved.
Yeah, I want to rewatch. I actually haven't seen. No, I have seen all of Hill House, but it's been a long time. Long time.
Yeah, they have that Welcome to Derry show coming out. I was just going to mention that Hill House show.
Yeah, I feel like prequels are becoming a thing lately, so maybe we can get a prequel for the Hill family.
Oh, that would be great.
That would be very cool.
I would love that. And Poppy's at the time period that I love, so
it's a good, great time period.
Yeah, well, we're behind it, so if you guys need a producers, creative, financially, I don't know, but
like the Monologue Podcast Studio is here to present.
We're very emotionally supportive.
Yeah.
Yes, we from the sidelines could be.
So, Katie, what are you working on right now? What can we plug for you?
Well, I worked on the pilot for Holes, if you remember the book and the movie.
We were just talking about Holes. We almost watched it the other night.
Sorry, I'm really excited.
Oh, it's going to be a show?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's amazing.
It's going to be a show?
I heard they were making it.
Yes.
I didn't even know.
I had not heard of this, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, wait, I don't know.
Are we allowed to know anything or like who you are or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, so it's public knowledge that it's a pilot. We only shot the pilot. I have no idea if it will be a series or not. Disney Plus will decide that.
Everyone loves Holes.
Yeah, good IP. Good IP.
It's great IP.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that's all I'm going to say. I worked on that and I hope it goes to series, and I have no idea if it will or not, but it was really fun. And we wrapped that in May. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you guys film in the desert?
We sure did. That's
amazing.
What is it like filming in the desert? It just sounds hot.
It's not great. I've done it many times. It's weather is weathering there. We were in Albuquerque and we were on a reservation, and I personally just feel like the spirit gods of the reservation are like please don't film your movie here. I don't, please don't, like, get out of here. So it's very dusty and very hot or very cold. Yeah. But beautiful. Like, it looks incredible through a lens, but challenging on the body.
Well, I hope you get more challenge and they green light it.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited. Pretty special. Yeah, I hope it goes too.
I feel like everything leans to, I'm knocking on wood, but I feel like it's come back around, right? So I feel like people are going to be clamoring for it. There was the whole, like, you know, I'm tired of this grandpa. That went around for a long time.
That's true. That's true.
So, that's all I hear when my girlfriend doesn't want to do something is, I'm tired of digging these holes. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? My friend
it took
was
a minute
like,
to catch on.
My friend was like, I wish there was, I don't know, like a channel where it was all pilots that never went into series and you could just see the pilot of like every single show. And I was like, that would be so cool. That I would watch.
I actually just recently, speaking of Victoria Pedretti several minutes ago, there was one that she did with that comedian whose name I cannot remember that they just put on YouTube. I feel like more people should do that. If it's not going to be picked up, just put it out there. Let us watch it. If I think of the name of this, I'll put it on the internet somewhere, but it was a weird show. It was really good.
It was a pilot she shot that they put on
YouTube? Yeah, it was, the comedian, he's got the glasses and the curly hair, and he's very skinny, and she was in his comedy special recently. I wish I could remember his name.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't come to mind.
Can I?
I'll think like of it later and put it
can
on.
Can I put like
on
a fan casting idea that I have into the universe?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I want to be very clear that this does not exist. This is just something that I talk to my fiance about all the time. This is not Universal, but Disney. So the French, the Disneyland Paris, their Haunted Mansion is different. It has a different storyline, which is a lot darker. It's like more true horror instead of the one in the US that's like funny ghosts.
Yeah.
And it's about this like family, like the Ravenswood family. And, if it were to ever get made, I feel like it would be a perfect project for Guillermo del Toro. And I think you would be perfect for a Melanie Ravenswood. Riley, are you your face was reacting. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I just love Guillermo del Toro and Katie Parker.
Well,
throw them together.
If
that
you ever,
great.
If you ever feel like together. It, look up Phantom Manor is what the French Haunted Mansion is called. And every time that we go on that ride or somebody talks about it, I'm always like nudging my fiance, like, Katie Parker should be Melanie Ravenswood. Somebody needs to make this.
Kelsey. From your mouth to God's ears, baby.
So let's
putting it into the universe.
Put it in the universe.
Put it out in the universe.
Put it out.
Because I know Guillermo's wanted to make a Haunted Mansion movie like for forever, and it just doesn't work. And so this would basically be that, but it wouldn't be like a, because they have those already. And so this is
the
like
last one that came out
story.
Was really rough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but this is like a different storyline. Yeah. The Phantom Manor is like more of true horror, so it could be darker. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Cool.
That's all right, let's do it. Let's keep Katie working. Keep making horror for all
always.
The weirdos and queer kids.
The theater
like
kids.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for being here, Katie. Really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah, thank
so
you
so much. It's lovely to hang with all of you and great questions.